Accession number 22345, Reel 17.
Major Perkin, Reel 15. You're saying you went to the Gloucester Regiment for refresher training at Warminster. What did they teach you that you didn't know when you got there?
Nothing.
Nothing.
But they were the demonstration battalion
at Warminster. School of Infantry.
Yes, and also senior staff. Sorry. Colonels above and civilians.
Higher command and staff corps or something like that, yes.
And I was put in charge of a platoon. I come down in rank to captain. And so I was a platoon commander and a demonstration for the training school there. Only interest in nothing much. One day I was doing a demonstration as per the school curriculum on a defensive position. And I didn't think much of it, but not my business. Sometime later, I had to do the same again. And just as I started the demonstration, a man came up and said, "Well, the school instructor can't get here today. Will you take over?" Well, I took over. And at the end of it, there were two pole kennels, Polish servants, keeping it. And they said to me, "What do you think of this position?" I thought, I don't know how I got nothing to lose. I mean, reduced in rank, so I can't get. Just sort of space I was in would have been in his casino. It was a long time hill. I was over there. And that was bad. And he gave his grade and went to all the other officers' grade. And I thought them were. But see, 2 days later, the commandant was a chap called Rhys Mogg, who was a brother, I think, of the Times. A very good chap. He sent for me. He said, "How you went against the cruel solution?" I said, "Yes, I did." He said, "Why?" I said, "In China." He said, "Well, you should never go against the solution. And everyone, rather, so you can be rather about anything."
Your solution became the school solution.
Otherwise, it went on. Then I went off. I left my wife behind in England because I didn't know a family or congregation of radio in there. It wasn't. So went out there. Before I went out, in Northern Zeta, waiting to go out there, I sent to Malaya for books on Malay. And I got them. And started learning. And that way, I couldn't get the pronunciation. I just learned the vocabulary. I learned some thousands of words I got out there. So by the time I got to Blair, I had good vocabulary, but then I had to lose it. I didn't know much about the pronunciation and left about the grammar. So I was sent on a language course in Nee Soon Barracks in Singapore.
Who was teaching you on that language?
An Englishman. Yeah. Pretty basic basis. Yeah. And in fact, after 2 weeks, he said he recognized me more than he did. And he said he went, it was better off practicing the battalion, speaking with the troops. So I did 2 weeks there. I went out to my restaurant. The plan, I've been put to the second Malay. in Taiping. When I got there, I was told I'd now been pushed away from that. It says the camp commandant in Kuala Lumpur.
Did you have any time at all with the 2nd Battalion before you went there?
No, not at all. There was one officer who I talked to, and he, I don't want to commend him, he said, you have to get used to being a captain now, you've been made a long time. I mean, in all this sailing sort of way, it wasn't a bad thing. But he said, well, I mean, that's a lumpy thing. I said, that's right. So I accepted it. And also, went. It's coming in later. So I sent him off to Kuala, the brigade there, the commandant. That's the one thing he didn't want, which is a horrible job. But to me, I was not that sort of
job. What were the requirements of that job?
Well, running the brigade headquarters, and running a brigade headquarters, his dog buddy. And but also I found that is after the rife for corruption, because I had to deal with Chinese and Indian contractors.
But you were dealing with the administration as well as
the minister. Just why didn't I want the job? I tarted up the whole order. My predecessor hadn't cared a damn about the look of the place, and a lot of fizzing went on. They were taking bribes from the contractors. Contractors all over him when I got there, opposite their cars and this and that. So I made sure they couldn't. I bought a car, but I bought the money to the army and paid the bill through the army town, so never get out of me, my hands go. And it's not right. I reported it in writing to the brigadier.
Who was the brigade commander then at that time?
Rees, I think.
What did he say when you reported to him about this?
Well, he said, well, to bit, let sleeping bogs by. You clean it up. Let's leave it out. Just clean it up. I said, stop you cleaning it up. Let's leave it out. So I said, clean it all up.
How did you?
I brought it myself in the letter. I said, you, as a bit, are doing the wrong thing, because you're testing more furnace in your room than you should have, and I'm doing the wrong thing. I have time at least to finish work before I can do it. They prepared about 1,000 pairs of boots in 1 month, see, and really, we hadn't had about 3 business suits there. So, and there I carried on for about, must be near 2 months, I think. And then suddenly a posting came there to the 6th of May there as a company commander.
Where were the 6th Malay Regiment when you joined them?
In Raub.
And what did the battalion consist of? Was it a fully formed battalion?
Yes,
up to strength?
Four companies and headquarters.
Was it organised on an Indian Army basis or a British Army basis?
British Army, I'd say. Not the same. Except the Indian Army, we always had followers. Do you know what the followers is?
The camp followers, weren't
they? Yes, which is didn't have the Malayans. Yes, same idea. There was Indian here, Indian ranks, Havelock and like that. In the Malay Army, they had same ranks as British.
Yeah.
Sergeants of age, some 2,000 and so forth.
How many men were there in your company when you took it over?
I'd say about 100 odd. You never told people. I always remember the day I took over. They were in the jungle. The company working in the jungle. And I said, so that my camp was almost empty with no travel. I thought I'd have impressed these men who was in charge, in command now. My wife, I told her, this is, don't agree with me at all. I don't care. So as soon as the men came, they all just in, as they would be after coming up the zone, I drummed up and down that patch about 10 minutes, very hard. And then I had to break out, get set, and came back into the dining room. I talked to them. When they came back, they were rung down to my experience of life. And all was well, I said. I told them I intended to kill more Magnus than anyone else in the battalion, and not have any casualties. We'd be careful. When I left, we seized the record in 6 months. But when I left 3 days later, we hadn't suffered a single casualty. Not one.
What sort of men were they in the company? Were they all Malay?
No,
Indians or Chinese in
the ranks? They were in the police, but not in the army. British officers, but more and more ladies came in.
How many British officers were there? Were there?
I joined there, East Commissar had a British commander. And the headquarters of the boss, yes. And it had about six business officers. But slowly, a bit of it got in Malays. Handed over seeing one later to a Malay officer, very nice chap, but Malay was a very easy command, no trouble.
What sort of chaps were they who had actually joined the forces? What sort of background did they come from? Because
which?
You're Malays, Malay soldiers.
All visitors, farming. None of them from the towns or above the farm stations. They're all panels, landless.
Were they...
Like the Indians.
Like the Indians. Were they from a particular part of the country, your battalion? Did they have a regional recruiting
No,
area?
Not so much as an Indian army. But here, I don't think so, no. I don't think so. Because in the end, the sixth Malay resident, it came from all over there. All Malays. Never have any Chinese or Indian in it. In our battalion, there was one officer there who was more Indian than there, but... He's nice, I mean, he married an Irish girl. He came and found us. But he was came to Tamil's shop. He was a very best.
What was the physical state of these chaps? Were they physically robust
fit?
And how did you find their level of military skills?
At best, you're right, they did virtue. But, one day, to me, there's no such thing as shouting at the men. You can't have a thousand men who shout at the men of the British Army or in the Army. They were made dental. And they were made dental, not because they were frightened, but they're very polite people.
What sort of operations were you conducting in that area at that time? You said they were out in the jungle, a whole company, when you joined. What have they been up to?
I tried to see this brief. I got about 2 pages in my memoir. When during the war, Malaya had a Malayan population and also a Chinese population. When the Japs came in, the Chinese population almost a lot of them went underground. Went to the down and fought against the Japs. With the headman was a chap called Jinping. Now, he did so well during the war against the Japs, he was then given the OBE. But then on he came that sword in the side of the British. Because by that time he was going to leave Malaya. And he and the Chinese, backed by the Chinese Communist in China, wanted to fill in this vacuum of business regime. And they wanted to take over the country. And then make it a communist regime. And we call them communist terrorists, CTs. And they rode down the jungle before my time in a group of about 200 men. And they cut off Harris to the business. And they killed, Gurney, the High Commissioner there. And by the time I arrived, the BRICS plan was just coming in force, and they were moving around in a group, 4 or 5, 10 at most, quite all of this. So we were out looking for the producers who they lived. I was pretty handy about the distance. If I could get a friend of the visitors to supply them a fool, they would. It's quite difficult with a big span in force. Then they started making a cultivation in the jungle. We couldn't go about the main cost was cassava. It's very easy to go. You just stick it down and it goes. But you have to have an area about the size of this lawn in the jungle to get a bit light into the room. So they cut down trees. Well, unfortunately, there, because you could see it. That was there. So we could find out where they were. But some of the Kyrgyz wanted to invest that, not because of this room. Just to do something.
Were they actually able to conduct any sort of offensive operations at the time that you joined the regiment?
Yes, they were.
What sort of things were they doing?
They attacked our operation in the jungle. Companies attacked. But I don't know if I was lucky, but none of my men never. But I was very careful. I've been brought up in the army, and I didn't like it, but when I sat down to camp, I maybe have sent it out.
Yeah.
Night, day and night. Quite a bind, but these are other men who went out, they knew they could do all that they wanted in peace. Otherwise, they never may going to be attacked. In fact, I was never. And when I went walking through the jungle, I had sight, left the sight. Soon it stopped anywhere.
Put your pickets out immediately.
Yes. Without me giving it off, it stopped out there.
That became a drill then?
Yes. I told them that. I had to tell my men this. I had sandals. And that's why we kept this, some bandits. And two of them said they seen me personally quite some time watching me going by.
Well, they hadn't opened fire on you, they hadn't.
I was out of once. I was in the jungle, in the big tent. I sent my men off. I was doing nothing, just lying in my hammock. And I stopped as fired. I had a better go. Not really. I was still quite a way for me. I don't know why. I had to run tough. I wouldn't say missed me because they've come near me, really. I just had to go out. And I had to stop them. I couldn't remember who did it or what.
What sort of operations were you conducting at that time? Were you doing large scale search and sweep, or were you doing patrolling? Or
mostly because my accident was on the telly like this. I go out with my men, 50, 60 of them, two presumed, one to back. And when I got the point, I'd send out 600 men, about five or six men under the North Quarter, and they go off in different directions. I give the compass to them. I say, go off for, I think, I should say about half an hour. Not miles, can't tell miles in danger. Go half an hour and come back. Same route. Don't go, you get to them. And you see anything, come back to them, you go for, and see what tracks. And if it didn't fly, they came back, another area, do this. So, look, we found all sorts of things. Tracks of cities. They used to top the top together lots. They'd have a little extra cup tricks or something. And then I had a test of my company, an E-bound tracker from North Borneo.
What would a tracker look for when he was going through the jungle?
He looked at any footmarks. First of all, that's the safety of the camp. That's about all they left. They just a couple of feet. And after a while, I think I was as good as a tracker. I could tell you. I could tell how long. You know, I thought about being there. One day I was going along, following the tracks, and I suddenly saw a pug bark of a lion, it was a tiger. And as I looked at it, a bit of grass, back up. Obviously, the path down there, in about a minute or more. But I mean, when you go to all these footpaths, you remember how it rained for 2 days, 3 days. I could tell almost immediately how long they've been there.
When you went out on one of your expeditions with your two platoons, how long would you stay out in the jungle?
Normally, I personally didn't like to be more than a week. We used to survive by air. And every 5 days. So you carry 5 days on you. By the time you raise out, you talk about 60 pounds or whatever it is in Japan.
That's a lot to carry.
Because in the jungle, you're not the longer you're under you, so all day.
Having to stoop down all the time. And what would the rations consist of? What were?
Malay was rice and fish.
Rice and fish.
And some vegetables, called meat vegetables. I personally would eat their food. So in the end, I didn't. Forgive me, I didn't eat all that. Nor that tea pill. I had a lot of weight. Mostly through that, not eating properly and not sleeping of it. So I did. I lost I have a lot.
What sort of clothing did you have for these jungle operations?
All the blue denims, green denims, and high boots with a little goodies in them. It's not there at all. You had leashes on you.
How did you give orders when you were in the jungle? Did you do it verbally or did you do it by hand signals, some other means?
Verbally, because verbally, yes. They give you just two instances. Once we're going on, I was a total third in line. Two men in front of me.
Yes.
I was tell them how to go. I had a compass, and then I want the distance. But they go on about about 2 or 3 hours in front of you. 2 minutes. If we heard anything, very quiet. We stop. Sometimes it has a woodpecker bird. Sometimes it's talking to the trees. And it's all the time. Once again, I had this topping. And I saw these two men, I went towards, because it was clear there. And I saw a bandit in there, chopping the trees, obviously making a clearing. So I went out, got one of my platoon sergeants, and said, you go to the men, that's all, on the outside, shoot that man, and I'll be on this side. Mm. I think there's probably more than one man, there's probably 2 or 3 somewhere. There's a body. And so you shoot them there, I'll be here, and get the rest. And you do that. Clever cock, or whatever. What's he then? And we walk, and I got my men to be first at all things, they thought, oh, boom, same. And I had a shot to him, and that's it, no one came round at all. We waited, and then my sergeant sent us, came through, he knew where I was, I knew where he was, and I said, what happened? And she said, well, he's a man, but he's not that bad. He's gone down the back.
He shot another man then?
No, not there, he's half there. Mm. So the people stand that way.
They ran away from you?
Away from him. And I kept the rest of them. Mm. I was so cross.
Mm. Why did your sergeant not done as he was told? Do you know why the sergeant did not do as you told him? Had he got lost in the jungle?
No. In the Indian Army and the Brazilian, I always held that they will always do what they're told. If they don't do it, their orders have not been clear. Oh, bastard. Yes, and orders must have been faulty, or could have been faulty. So, had I given the wrong order? Mm. I personally don't think so. I think he didn't realize how far he had to go. He saw this service before he got the far side.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Anyway, Peter as me, I reported this on the Burr that night to the colonel. Put a man on the charge. He's quite a character, the colonel. Put him on the charge. So, very good charge, by the way, very good man. So, when he came back, those are my orders, put him on the charge. And I said, up to you to say, that's what you say. When you go up to the colonel, if my orders weren't clear, you would say so. And he said, I know you're always, well, you're quite a John, I just didn't go far enough. So he was on it, he got a severe rest around, and about 2 months later, I promoted it. He's a very good man, it's just a mistake.
Just miscalculated the distance.
Yes, yes. That's all done by wristing. And on another occasion, I was told that the communists cutting a clearing. I went with about 30 men this time. And after about 2 days, we must be getting near the area. I settled out and went out with about 6 or 7 men, I can't remember, maybe 8. We went out in the direction of the they thought that there was a terrible one. Sure enough, after a while, we heard topping.